Sim Trainer. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery, and we would like you to join us today if you're interested. Give us a call here at the studio at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and I want to get right to kind of the meat of the topic tonight, today, because I got a feeling it's going to provoke quite a bit of response. And I'm doing this because we said way back when we started this show several years ago that one of the things we wanted to do is promote truth and hearty and healthy dialogue between people who have opposite opinions about issues particularly related to guns. And this last week, there was an incident that more or less exploded into the news, and it went viral on the internet, and it concerned a Riverside, Ohio police officer that had contact with an individual at the Speedway station in Riverside. The facts are, as best we can tell, the officer was getting ready to go into the store, and a citizen exiting the store just mentioned to him that there's a man with the gun inside the store, inside the convenience store. The officer then approached the front of the store and, in fact, saw an individual openly carrying a pistol in a holster on his hip and entered the store and engaged the subject in a conversation. The conversation, I don't have, I'm not going to go into the specifics, but I will, as accurately as possible, summarize what occurred. He approached the individual, asked him what he was doing. He basically said, exercising my Second Amendment right. Asked him for his identification. The individual said he did not have it with him, did not identify himself at that point. The officer, again, continued to inquire, why do you think you can do things like this? And the individual, again, reasserted the fact that this is my Second Amendment right. And the officer followed up with, why do you think you can do this? And again, basically the crux of the individual's response was, because I can do it and there's nothing against the law. And the reason I wanted to talk about this topic is because people, Mark and I have different opinions about that, and that's okay. And I'm sure Mark and I's opinions are different than many of your opinions out there. And I want to approach it. I want to start off by talking about the law enforcement perspective, because I feel very confident that being employed as a police officer for 30 years, that I've come across situations where I can take people through the progression of how officers think in different situations and what kind of authority they're acting on. But in this particular,
this should be fun.
Yes. In this particular case, you have an officer with a substantial amount of experience, had achieved supervisory status in his agency. He approaches a convenience store at 4:30 in the morning. A citizen comes out, not frantic, but expresses, let's use the word, concern or curiosity about why an individual would be with a gun inside the convenience store at 4:30 in the morning. I have to tell you, and I know Mark kind of, I think, thought this was a little bit odd, but in my 30 years of experience, I have never once, nor has anybody that I've talked to yet, seen an individual with a gun openly displayed in a store under such circumstances. And the reason I bring that up is because
part of the circumstances included 4:30 in the morning.
Yes, 4:30 okay. in the morning, and the fact that the gun was there. And I'm going to go on and talk about other circumstances, but I want to continue with this line of thought. And so when officers get involved in situations and they decide to take some sort of action, And officers can do, basically, there's three sorts of interactions police have between themselves and citizens. The lowest level is simply a consensual encounter. I just walk up to you. I engage you in conversation. We start talking about things. If I'm curious about what you're doing in a particular area, why you're doing it, I can ask questions about it, but you don't really have to answer, and you can turn around and walk away from me, and there's not much I can do because I have nothing at all. The second level, in which I would argue this case clearly falls into, is what's called an investigative detention, whereby police officers have reasonable articulable suspicion, which is lesser than probable cause, which is also way lesser than proof beyond a reasonable doubt to continue to gain a conviction in trial. But reasonable articulable suspicion, and the way we typically say that is, more likely than not, something's not right. Something is not right, and it's heading in the nature of criminal activity. And The third level is a full-blown arrest where you have probable cause. Proof that in probable cause is simply defined as facts and circumstances that would lead a reasonably well-trained officer to believe that a crime is being committed and the individual that's the focus of your suspicion is the person who committed it. Clearly, that was not the case here. It was in the center case, and that's quite frankly where we operate most of the time. Police officers, by their nature, when we engage in preventive patrol, we frequently get involved with people who we think might be involved in criminal activity, and sometimes they're not, and it just happened to be circumstances, and sometimes they are, and we get lucky. That's kind of how it goes, and it's the curiosity that we have based on years and years of experience, which was another factor in this particular situation, that lead us to do what we do. So let's look at the factors here. Well, first of all, let me also mention there's a major Supreme Court case called Terry versus Ohio that was decided in 1968, where the court recognized the fact that police officers have tough jobs. And when they were trying to distinguish between investigatory stop and an arrest, they said that they are going to, in the fact circumstance in that case, uphold the authority of the police to detain people when they observe, here's a key word, unusual conduct that leads them to reasonably conclude, in light of their experience, that criminal activity may be afoot. Now, that's key, and that is the crux of the Terry decision. When you talk about the court recognized the fact that police have to operate in an environment where things are uncertain, rapidly evolving, ever-changing, and they said we can't always hold them to make sure they do everything the right way or the way we would do it 24 hours after the incident when we have hindsight and we can Monday morning quarterback it. The court said that we're going to give police officers authority to detain individuals when they see unusual conduct and they can reasonably conclude based on their training and experience that criminal activity may be afoot. Now, let's put that formula along with what I talked about earlier. Let's plug those elements into this. I mentioned earlier, 4:30 in the morning, officer gets out of the store or gets out of his car, starts approaching the speedway. Citizen approaches him, advises him there's a man with a gun in a holster inside the store. Officer has never seen such a situation in his career, and he decides to investigate. He approaches the individual, asks for identification, and right away, the individual indicates he doesn't have any identification, explains that he has a Second Amendment right to carry a gun openly, and he's not doing anything wrong. All of the factors I just stated are true across the board. Now the issue comes down to what can an officer do in a situation like this to bring the situation to a conclusion? On the one end, many of you out there, close to Mark's opinion, nothing. Just turn around, walk out of the store, realize that people have the right to carry openly anywhere where they're not prohibited from doing so, and police can't intervene in a situation. All the way to my stance is, I feel I have a legal duty to you, the citizens out there, to inquire as to what's going on and get reasonable answers about what the individual is doing so that I can, in good conscience, turn around, get in my cruiser, and drive away from there feeling there's nothing going to happen. So in this particular case, the officer ended up escorting the individual outside. Because the situation, as we describe it, didn't progress in the manner that we normally are used to them progressing, in that people readily cooperate with us, they give us the identity, and we verify their identity, and then when we find out there's nothing, they go about their business. In this particular case, based on the facts and based on the limited video that's available, this incident would have been over in probably 3 to 5 minutes had it progressed through the normal process of investigative detentions that we are readily exposed with. Instead, it went on probably between 25 and 35 minutes. The officer ended up handcuffing the individual, taking his gun from him, placing him in the back of the squad car, and they engaged in additional dialogue. It resolved by the officer getting the individual out of the car, writing him a citation for obstructing official business, sending him on his way, and giving him his gun back with him, and he was able to leave. And the individual subsequently has filed a $3.6 million lawsuit for deprivation of rights and things of that nature. Now, one other element I want to mention here is I find it hard to believe, based on the facts of the circumstances, that this individual just had the desire to go to this convenience store at 4:30 in the morning, pick up what he wanted, and just get in his car and drive away. I can't prove that otherwise. But the way things went subsequent to the officer's initial inquiry, I can't help but to think that this was a provocation situation where they were just prodding the police to react so that he got the intended result, which was some basis for a lawyer to get involved and file a civil lawsuit. And obviously it's going to ultimately be decided in the court. And later on, you know, we'll talk about some of the issues that past cases present and how cases proceed through the court process, through the deposition in the civil proceeding and through indictment in criminal proceedings. And, you know, we'll see how that ultimately goes. And we've mentioned many times in many cases that we've talked about here on the show that we have to reserve our final commentary to how the case comes out. But because this video went viral and because you, the listeners, have strong opinions about this, because we've mentioned several times, I'll bet we've had at least 20 calls in the last year relative to open carry and the provisions, things of that nature. There is curiosity there. I want to bring it up and I want to engage in dialogue, and I want to turn the mic over to Mark and let him say a few things.
Okay, well, what I'm going to say first is that if you'd like to get in on this conversation, you can call the studio at 457-1290, and we are going to have to take our break here in just a couple of minutes, so we're not going to take any calls yet. But if you'd like to get on the queue and be part of this conversation after the breaks, we'd love for you to do that. One of the things that I think is relevant here is, I agree that it's possible this guy had an intent to set up a situation where something might go the way he expects it to go, but wishes it wouldn't go that way. And then because it did go that way, he went ahead and continued with the actions that he has done, in fact, having filed a lawsuit. My argument to Jeff throughout this discussion, and we have had quite a lively discussion between the two of us over the last week, going over some of these factors. It's been a lot of fun, and we don't really agree on the final outcome, and I think that's kind of the point. We're not all going to agree on the final outcome for these things, and it is going to be decided in the court, but we don't have to be disagreeable about it. It's okay to not everybody have the same opinion on a particular idea. The facts are the facts, and we can't argue about that. I think we should find out what they are, and I think we should know the facts before we go too far down leaping off of cliffs and jumping to conclusions. But I think one of the key things about this is that if that, in fact, was his intent, the worst thing that the police could have done was to satisfy his desire to create a scene. And I understand his perspective, but I think there's also a need that we recognize what the consequences are for doing exactly what he expected. Let's go ahead and take that first break. If you'd like to be on the show, call 457-1290, and we'll be back right after this with Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery in with Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip, and we'd like to invite you to join the show at 457-1290 if you'd have a comment that you'd like to make. Let me say one other thing. I put a link up to this story from the police1.com site, which is where a lot of the police have seen it and why it has gained some of the national attention that it has. And that's up on our Facebook page at facebook.com/simtrainer. So if you'd like to see what this story was about, it was published originally in the Dayton Daily News. I don't have that link, but that's up there. So if you'd like to see that, then you can go out and take a look at that while you're listening to the show. Let's go out and talk with Matt, who's calling from Dayton. Matt, welcome to the show.
How are you doing?
We're doing fine. How would you like to, what's your comment about this?
My comment is I live in Dayton, Ohio, and it just seems like the cops in Dayton, Ohio, they'll take any kind of reason to pull you over, and it don't really matter if you've done nothing wrong or not. They'll just find a reason just to shake you down. I mean, I've lived out here all my life, and I've been pulled over for no reason at all.
Okay, you do realize, of course, that this wasn't a pulled over type situation. This was just two people that were out in the convenience store, right?
Yeah, I understand, but I'm saying, like, if he just walks into a store with his gun showing if he has a license to carry and he's not committed any type of crime at all, what gives the officer the right to even ask for his information if he's not betraying a threat towards anybody, or maybe just in there to do what he's got to do and leave?
Well, then that's the issue here, and again, without knowing all the circumstances, how it went, that's what we want to talk about. You obviously have an opinion one way, and that's why we want to give you a microphone to voice that opinion.
Well, my opinion is, if a person walks to a store and he has his weapon showing, whatever, and he's not, like, threatening anybody in any way or acting hostile in any way, I don't feel that an officer should have a right to even ask him what's going on unless he's portraying that he's going to commit a crime or he's committed a crime.
Okay, Matt, great. Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk with Paul, who's calling from Riverside, where this occurred. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I'm the son of a police officer.
Okay.
So, in my opinion, the only reason that the officer would go in and talk to him in the first place is just to make sure that he's able to even have a gun. So, like with a CCW, I think you should present your identification just to, you know, let the officer know that you're allowed to even have a gun. And it's just a safety thing for people around, because you don't, if a person can't have a gun, you don't want them, you know, carrying guns around and causing trouble.
Let me ask you this question. This is kind of a parallel question. It's not directly related to guns, but do you think it would be appropriate then for the police to set up outside of a bar and stop everyone that drives out of the parking lot because they might be drunk and we don't know whether or not they're allowed to be driving a car?
In my opinion, yeah. I mean, my dad was almost killed by a drunk driver in his cruiser. He got hit head on. So, in my opinion, I mean, yeah, that probably should be done.
Okay. And I think that's, you know, it's an interesting perspective. At least you're consistent about that.
Paul, as a police officer, I just want to comment on your previous comment, and that is when you're talking about, you know, the police officer should be able to, we can't operate under the premise that we do things just because we should be able to when there's law that kind of guides in particular areas. And so, again, what I tried to do is set this up in the context of a Terry versus Ohio investigative detention. And I think ultimately, I feel no doubt in my mind when it gets in the courts, that's what it's going to be decided on. All these other emotional opinions are going to certainly be voiced, but the judge and or the jury are going to make their decisions based on the objective reasonableness of the officer in this particular case conducting a Fourth Amendment investigative detention, and they're going to determine whether or not the scope was within the authority of the police versus what we think police should be able to do, or what you think your dad should do, or I think I should be able to do as a police officer. But thank you for your comment.
Paul, thanks very much. We're going to need to take a break here in a minute, so there's not really enough time to get another caller the fair amount of time. So when we do come back after the news at the bottom of the hour, we will go right back into the calls, and we will take your calls here at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. And just before the break, if you happen to just tune in, we're talking about the Riverside, Ohio incident where a police officer approached an individual with open carry in a speedway. And as we suspected and as we had hoped, we're getting a lot of pushback, a lot of people interested. And we're going to go right out the phones and let's talk to Mike in St. Paris, who wants to talk about open carry. Mike, you with us?
Yeah, I live up here in Champaign County, and I open carry quite frequently. In fact, I'm in Urbana right now, open carrying while I'm shopping. So just to give you a little bit of perspective on where I'm coming from. My question is, did he suspect that this individual committed a crime before he detained him?
Well, I don't know the actual answer to that, but I'm going to go with a no. I'm going to go with a no in the sense that did he suspect he had already committed a crime? No. Was he in the commission of a crime? Unknown. Okay.
It is my understanding that a LEO is not allowed to detain an individual unless they suspect that they have committed a crime or they suspect they are about to commit a crime. And I believe, I think in the report, this LEO even admitted that this individual had not committed a crime. So I don't see how he was even allowed to detain this individual under law.
Okay, well, again, you're looking at the difference between state law, the laws of arrest, and a constitutional law that governs Fourth Amendment case law here, which I mentioned in the first part of the show. There's three circumstances where police and citizens come into contact with each other. The simplest is just a citizen encounter. The second one, which we're talking about here, is an investigative detention. And that's not based on whether strictly there's a crime being committed. That's the tail end of it. Instead, it's whether the officer has authority to detain an individual based on his observations of unusual conduct, which would lead him to reasonably conclude, based on his experience and training, that criminal activity is afoot. Now, that's clearly different than what you're talking about, knowing for certain that an individual committed or is about to commit a crime. Do you understand?
Actually, Actually, no. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying what you're saying. I'm saying that I'm wondering if the officer at RAS, which is reasonable, articulable suspicion,
and that's
that
the
he has committed a crime.
That's exactly. But again, listen to what I'm saying. It's reasonable, articulable suspicion, as you mentioned, which would provide him with authority to detain an individual where he observes unusual conduct and where he reasonably conclude. He can conclude from his experience and training that crime might be afoot. Now, look at all the factors here. An officer, 4:30 in the morning, convenience store. Let's stop right there. What do we know about late night, early morning, hour activities at convenience stores? We know that criminal activity occurs there more frequently than it occurs at the same convenience store at 7 o'clock in the afternoon or 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 10 o'clock in the morning. Okay?
Sure.
Now that's just the first part of that. Now add to that, an individual comes out of the store, a citizen, and expresses concern. I'm not going to say he's concerned about a guy with a gun in a holster in the store. All right. And add to that, the officer's never seen such activity before. Now plug the facts as I gave them, which I think you're alluding to, but then you're carrying it a step further and you're getting hung up on the fact that the officer had to know for sure criminal activity was afoot. That's not the case. That is clearly not the case.
I'm just very curious whether or not the officer saw him open carrying.
He did. He did see him. After he got the information from the citizen, he looked inside the glass and saw him with the gun in his holster. Irrefutable. I agree that. I think the officer would concede that also.
Okay. Like I said, my point is that if an officer sees somebody open carrying and it's not And that is all they are doing. They're not committing any other crime or anything. The courts have been very clear. That is not RAS for detaining somebody.
Well, I disagree with the courts being very clear because there's only been two cases that have really addressed it point on point, and there have been several others that have alluded to different facts, and which you got to be careful about when you say the courts have been clear. Each case is decided on the specific fact pattern presented in that case. They often cite previous cases as a what they call prerequisite to making
precedent
to making a decision one way or another. But each case is decided on the merits of that case, as long as everything falls within the general scope of the issues that are ultimately going to be decided. But you got to understand that just because in your case you've heard where an individual's walking down the middle of Main Street at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and he has a gun and a citizen's upset and he calls the police in that particular case, as was the facts in one particular case that you may be referencing, law enforcement officers have taken note that there's not a whole lot they can do. They certainly can engage in a the first level consensual encounter. I can say, hey, bud, what's going on? What kind of gun you got? Where are you going? Where are you headed? They can do that. But absent anything else, they couldn't do anything more. I'm arguing as a police officer, not necessarily defending what the officer did here. I'm looking at it from the fact pattern as it exists based on Terry reasoning that he had objective, reasonable suspicion, or as you say, reasonable, articulable suspicion to make the stop and inquire.
Okay, well, perhaps we may be closer in agreement than I initially thought. Now, my second point was that you had an officer call about 10 or 15 minutes ago, and you brought up an example of, you know, can you just wait outside a bar and pull somebody over? And I was rather flabbergasted at his answer. I think one of the best analogies is this. Can an officer pull over a driver in a car just to see if they have a driver's license? I believe that's no. The only time an officer can pull over a car is, again, when they have RAS that they have been suspected of committing a crime.
Right.
That's
or violation. Doesn't have to necessarily be a crime.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
a violation, okay.
Yeah.
But you cannot pull over somebody just to see, hey, gee, I wonder if they have a driver's license. I'm going to pull them over.
Exactly, and that's why Mark brought that up. I just want to clarify one point. When Paul called in, he was the son of a police officer. He was not a police officer. And having five sons that are police officers that have strong, medium, and weak opinions about what we do as police officers, I can understand his perspective. Obviously, he admires his father, and certain, just like you and your son, whatever you do, if you have a child, they tend to kind of fall in line and have similar, for the most part, have similar opinions and perspectives on certain matters. And obviously they'll be different in others. But I just want to clarify the point. That was not an officer. He said he was the son of a police officer.
Michael, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's move on and talk with Anthony, who's calling from Lebanon about this same issue. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. My question is really, what is the catalyst to all of this open carry? From what I understand that you've explained is that this is a Second Amendment issue and therefore not anything new, or so the open carry thing, I'm just curious, what's the catalyst for everything being coming about? Is it all the new gun laws that they're trying to pass, or what?
Well, let me start off, and Mark and I both have opinions about this. My opinion, based on the items that have made the news, is that there's a contingent of individuals in our society that want to push forward with the agenda to more quickly make Second Amendment issues moot, in the sense that police officers don't need to be concerned about law-abiding citizens doing lawful things, okay? And now here's the other side of my comment, and I'm going to let Mark jump in. And I feel that they are actually, for every step they take forward, it puts us, and I'm going to put SimTrainer at the top of that list, because I think we've taken great strides to advance the whole concept of responsible gun ownership and all that means over the last 8 years. And every time the incidents that have gotten publicized occur and go national, it sets us back five steps for every step we've taken forward. Mark, you want to?
And Jeff and I have had some discussions about this. I'm not sure that the conclusion that he draws on steps backwards for steps forwards is necessarily accurate, but it's his opinion, and it's, you know, there's some evidence to suggest that. I think there's also evidence to suggest that the more people get comfortable seeing law-abiding citizens having firearms, the less chance there's going to be that people are going to freak out when they see someone that has a gun. There is certainly a right to keep and bear arms. If you don't have a right to keep that gun with you, then the and bear portion of the Second Amendment, and frankly, that's also codified in the Ohio Constitution, Article 1, Section 4. So it's both constitutions, both the U.S. and the Ohio Constitution, that guarantee the right to keep and bear arms. And so I think to some extent there are people who say, look, I have a right to do this. It's legal. And so I'm going to exercise that right, because a right not exercised is a right lost. And they want to educate people to say, look, this is not illegal. I'm not a bad guy. Good guys carry guns, too. And in fact, more good guys carry guns than you realize. And there are a lot more uses of firearms to defend law-abiding citizens than there are criminals using firearms to harm law-abiding citizens. And sure, all of that is true. Where I disagree a little bit with open carry, number one, tactically, it's a bad idea, because you're giving information to somebody who could use it against you in a way that could cost you your life. So from a tactical perspective, some say, well, it's faster to draw from concealed from open carry. No, not really, because I carry concealed and I can get the gun out of the holster in very short period of time. So that's as long as you practice with whatever you carry, then that's really not so much of an issue. And really they're talking about, I want to bring people to the point where they have to deal with this question. And my disagreement with that is, you don't have a right to force anyone to deal with anything.
Correct. Okay. See, thank you.
Thanks very much. One other issue
I want to enter into the discussion here is that one of the things that I think we can cite or reference right now is that there's a growing lack of trust in government that is kind of pervasive throughout the country. And this is just one way that people feel I can stop our slide down that slippery slope by exercising my Second Amendment and other related gun-related rights by doing the things I'm doing. And so there's a lot of things at issue here, and I'm glad we're able to have these kinds of discussions.
Anthony, thanks very much for calling the show. We've still got full phones, and we're running up against a break here in a second, but I'd like to see if we can get Rick in real quick before we go. Rick, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Jeff, I'd like to say, you know, I think way too much is being made over the time that he was out at 4:30 in the morning, and you're kind of acting like that's a supposition that he's up to no good. Maybe, you know, you need to go squirrel hunting a little bit more, because there's been many times that I've been out at 4:30 in the morning and went into a convenience store to grab a cup of coffee or a pack of batteries because I want to be set up, you know, hunting by sunrise. And so, you know, you're kind of supposing that this guy was trying to set up the police or the time, you know, causes reasonable suspicion. But I've been in convenience stores many times going squirrel hunting at 4:30 in the morning, and you go down to Shawnee State Forest, and they actually encourage you to carry a sidearm because of rabid animals.
Rick, let me just mention one thing. I agree with what you say on one side, but the other thing you got to understand, I'm presenting the 4:30 in the morning as one of a list of factors that the officer considered in deciding to approach this individual. Not solely. It wasn't the most important. It was one of about 7 or 8 things that he considered. And I want people to understand that the court will ultimately decide the totality of the circumstances in this case as to whether or not it was authorized.
Okay, we need to take our last break for the hour. Thanks very much, Rick, for calling the show. And we still have other folks on the phone. We'll get back to you as soon as we come back from this break on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery with Jeff Pedro on Shooting from the Hip, and we've been having a great conversation about the question of open carry. Let's go right back out to the phones. We've got just a few minutes left. Talk to Bob, who's calling from Waynesville. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. A couple questions. What was the outcome of his citation that he received?
The charge ultimately was dropped by the city prosecutor.
Okay. Second thing is, and Jeff, you probably know this best, I thought the Ohio Revised Code had a section in it that if a peace officer in Ohio asks you for government ID, photo ID, you must present it.
The section you're talking about is 2921.29, failure to disclose personal information, and it says no person who is in a public place shall refuse to disclose a person's name, address, or date of birth when requested by a law enforcement officer, and this is important, who reasonably suspects either of the following. Number one, the person is committing, has committed, or is about to commit an offense, or number two, the person has witnessed any of several things that would include you saw something that was an offense. So I think that's the part that the person in this case, the open carry in this case, is hanging on, is that, and some of the other comments that we've heard, is that he didn't have any reason to suspect either of those things. Certainly no other crime had been committed. And that's part of the issue at discussion, I think.
Yeah, and one of the things that the court's going to decide here, before they even get to this will just be part of the bigger picture, is whether the officer was reasonable in his assumptions that he made ahead of time. And then this was just another factor. And even though case law says that under certain circumstances they don't have to identify, the court could make a decision that they feel that the officer's actions were reasonable, that in this particular circumstance the individual was required, but we're going to have to wait and see what the outcome is.
Both of those things can be true at the same time, right? That the officer doesn't have complete information and he makes a decision based on what he reasonably believes, and the other person, the person who is open carrying, can say, I wasn't committing a crime and there's no reason to suspect that you're committing a crime, and I don't have to provide identification because I'm not doing something that requires that I do that. For example, if he had gotten into his vehicle and he was open carrying, now that's a different situation, because the only way you can be in a vehicle with a firearm that's loaded is if you have a license to carry a concealed handgun. And if at that point the officer required him to provide identification, he would be obligated to do so.
But at that point, wouldn't the officer have to have reasonable suspicion that he didn't have a license to carry concealed?
At that point, I don't think so, because he had, especially in this particular case, he had already said he didn't have ID.
Okay. You're saying he walked away, climbed in his car.
Yes. Exactly.
So he'd already begun the
encounter
process at
yes.
that point.
Right.
Yeah. And as a side note, real quick, I was out running errands before I got home in time to turn the show on, and a young lady was in the carry out here in northern Warren County, and she was clearly carrying her gun with her. And nobody said a word.
Yeah. Well, again, I was very intrigued by the guy in Champaign and Champaign County in Urbana, and now you say in Warren County, because I have to tell you the demographics and the expectations and things that are normal in those areas are different than here. But thank you very much for your call, Bob. I appreciate that.
We need to run right out and get the last call of the day. Let's talk to John, who's calling from Dayton. John, welcome to the show.
Okay. The guy didn't have ID. It's granted that he should have had ID. The cop could have got him on no identification.
Not really.
The cop should have grabbed the guy that did the witness to and grabbed his ID, too. Who's to say the guy that walked out of the store got pissed up because he wasn't able to rob the store because somebody was in there with a gun?
That's a fair question.
Okay, also, it's okay for people, you know, to wear baggy pants down, and one of you being a law officer, you know when somebody's carrying a gun like that. Why don't you just stop the people then? you know?
Well, again,
or are you afraid of racial profiling?
Now, there's... Thank you for your call, but the bottom line there is we have to have reasonable or articulable suspicion or probable cause to engage in those kinds of encounters.
Let's see if we can squeeze one more in before the end of the hour. Kurt, well, welcome to the show.
You hey, guys. Love you guys, by the way. Anyways, the point that I've got is until you beat up the law enforcement with the laws through punitive damages, they're not going to realize that it's a right, and it's in the Ohio Constitution.
Thanks very much for calling the show. We are flat out of time. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro. Stick around after the news at the top of the hour for There Is a Season with Bob and Gloria. This is News Talk Radio, WHIO.